across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. This is a Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. National Smoothie Day, as Christina Lurie told us yesterday in the Uplift about some of the retailers out there that are offering specials on this first day of summer. Because, yeah, it's the first day of summer. Kicks off at officially, astronomically, at 9:57 this morning. If you missed our last hour on Who's Watching the Water Supply, part of our climate check with Melissa Baldoff, you can catch the show anytime by subscribing as a podcast. Find us at Apple, Spotify, all the usual places, including the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. And then tomorrow, in our hometown health segment, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and State Representative Lisa Subek will talk about new legislation they're unveiling today at the state capitol designed to protect the right to contraceptives in Wisconsin. Similar moves are happening in Washington, D.C., as Saturday marks the one-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision that removed women's health care rights in terms of abortion, repealing Roe v. Wade. But getting into this hour's topics about education and child care and other matters that are happening in the state legislature, we have State Representative Jody Emerson, Democrat of Eau Claire, joining us, I believe, from Madison today. Jody, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Happy summer to you.
Yes. Happy summer in Madison, which if it's anything like when I was in the legislature, you're in some cramped little apartment and the humidity is about 107% at this point.
It's a glamorous life, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Life on the isthmus. Ain't nothing quite like it. Look, we're going to cover a few different things over these next two segments. A little later, we'll get to child care counts, because we're going to be talking to a couple of child care providers at the bottom of the hour about this middle of the night vote Republicans took to essentially gut the program. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the two-part deal that Governor Evers signed yesterday, dealing with revenue sharing and with school funding. But where I really want to start is what comes next from that. Okay, we've taken care of revenue sharing with local governments. We've taken care of school funding, which helps public schools, but also helps voucher schools, unfortunately. We've talked at length about Robin Voss's, the Assembly Speaker's, attack on the University of Wisconsin system. But it is this attack now coming on the Wisconsin Technical College system that is especially sneaky, something that they tried last week in the Assembly Ways and Means Committee. Representative Emerson, can you explain why Assembly Bill 2 is still floating around and what Republicans, what they did to it, thinking they were going to sneak it through maybe?
I can explain what happened. I can't explain why it happened necessarily, mm-hmm. other than the fact that the education piece, like you were talking about in that two-part deal, is going to raise people's property taxes. That's the simple matter of it. It is going to raise property taxes. And I think Republicans realized that and thought, well, wait, we can't raise taxes. So what can we do? I know, let's remove the technical college levies on the property taxes. So a bill that came out back in January, AB2, dealing with personal property tax, was all of a sudden 20 minutes, maybe an hour before committee members were supposed to vote on it in committee, there was a substitute amendment, which for those of you at home, what that means is it takes out everything from the bill and replaces it with something completely different. Most of the time it's related, and they've just changed wording, and it's easier to do a substitute amendment than it is a whole bunch of stuff like take out this, add in this. Let's just rewrite it instead. But this one took out everything about personal property tax and made the whole bill about removing the technical school's ability to levy taxes onto our property taxes throughout the state without a hearing, without forethought on everybody's part, without it being wide open and transparent. And between that And then what happened in joint finance, where they were supposed to start at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and ended up starting at 11 o'clock at night and going until 2:30 in the morning. I just think the Republican theme for their convention should have been Wisconsin Republicans legislating in the dark and behind closed doors since 2011. you know, I mean, that's just the mantra that they seem to have taken up. So we're supposed to be voting on that bill on the floor today. We're hearing rumors that the Republicans are getting a lot of pushback on it, so it might not actually come to the floor. So if this is something that people care about, being able to have local control for technical colleges, call your legislator today, tell them to remove this bill from the agenda in the assembly. And if we want to do a bill about it, let's do a bill about it and do it the right way.
Today, the assembly's taking up a bill today that basically they swapped out the entire language for, that puts the technical college system at the whims of the legislature rather than relying on constituents and property taxpayers. It is, and it was something, as we talked about in the last hour, Wisconsin Public Radio, you know, found the drafting memo that found that this came from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss himself. So much more to cover with State Representative Jody Emerson, but first we're going to get an update on our weatherology forecast. We'll find out how the Brewers did against the Diamondbacks yesterday, and then we'll be talking about the Child Care Counts program at the bottom of the hour as well for Up North News Radio on this Wednesday. Find the work that we do at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back.
Come on, come on. It's time to get up. Come on, Sleeping Beauty. Wake up. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning.
All right, sleepyheads, before we get back to State Representative Jody Emerson and matters at the Capitol, it's time to get the update on the weatherology forecast and looking to see if there's some rain in the offing, since we are still rather dry. We got that inch of rain not too terribly long ago. But we could tell looking out at the fields here, we could use a little bit more. But let's check with Jennifer Wachitsky and see what we have in the full state of Wisconsin forecast for this Wednesday. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, like you mentioned, we certainly could use the rain showers, but it really doesn't look like we'll be seeing too much of that just quite yet. It looks like another similar day overall here for today compared to the past couple. A high pressure system remains in control. So looking at sunny skies across the board today, highs in the 80s, a little bit warmer for the southwestern part of the state, 90 around Richland Center. Summer officially starts this morning at 9:57, so definitely feeling summery today. Similar story for tomorrow with that high pressure, sunny skies, highs primarily in the 80s for your Thursday. Friday expecting basically the same for most, sunny skies, highs in the 80s, upper 70s closer to Lake Michigan, 90 around Richland Center. But for west central Wisconsin, starting to change a little, a mix of clouds and sunshine develops around Amory and Baldwin with a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms coming in into the afternoon hours. Saturday, primarily mid-80s to low 90s across the board with sunny skies for most. Blend of clouds and sunshine around Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids with a slight chance for showers and storms coming in the afternoon hours. Clouds for west central Wisconsin with that continued chance for showers and storms for the day. Then on Sunday, it looks like cloudy with a chance for showers and storms for everyone. A little drop in temperatures as a cold front pushes through, but it still looks like either at or above average for this time of the year, upper 70s to mid-80s.
Always appreciate the update, especially on this first day of summer. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Temperatures around the area right now include 68 in Waupun, 61 in Rice Lake. Westby reporting 65 degrees, and it is 63 degrees up here on Lake Wissota. The Brewers went over a month without rallying to win any games. They trailed by multiple runs. They've done it now twice in 3 days. William Contreras hit a two-run double in the seventh inning to put Milwaukee ahead as the Brewers came back from a four-run deficit to beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 7-5 last night. They'll play once more this afternoon at American Family Field before beginning a road trip. State Representative Jody Emerson is with us for this half hour as we've been talking about, well, it's they're all somewhat tied to the state budget, though not the state budget bill itself. We just talked about a big change in technical college system funding if Republicans were to get their way. I don't know that that's going to happen, but let's turn to that two-part deal that Governor Evers signed yesterday in Wausau, the revenue sharing bill, which gives a boost in state funding to local governments, And then the school funding bill, which is a bit more complicated. Representative Emerson, there has been, like I said before, there's something in this two-part deal for people to like, and there's things in there for people to hate. As you look back at it, is this, where does this meet your expectations for the legislative session? Let's put it that way.
Oh boy. Oh, that's a good question.
Let me say the bar was kind of low already simply because of how Republicans and Governor Evers, you know, the Republicans have been looking to block him every stretch of the way. So when you consider the bar was already low, did it at least get over that low expectations bar?
Well, what I'll say about the shared revenue and the education bill is I'm glad that people were at the table discussing things and actually doing some negotiating. I don't think Republican leadership got everything that they wanted. Democrats certainly didn't get everything they wanted either. But maybe through this process, we've learned to work together and compromise. So that's an important piece. The really important piece of the shared revenue that I don't think is getting a lot of press around the state, certainly in the bottom third of the state, but not other parts of the state, is that Milwaukee County and Milwaukee City were facing a fiscal cliff where bankruptcy was a serious consideration for them. As it is now, it looks like we have saved them from having to do that nuclear option. And so that's always good because saving one county and one city, the biggest economic driver in the state, from filing for bankruptcy is a huge piece. There's still a lot of work that locals are gonna have to do to get their fiscal house in order, but this gives them the tools to do it.
And that's fine. And you go ahead and be the good guy on that. And I'm going to go ahead and be the bad guy and say Republicans deserve no credit for quote unquote solving a problem that they more or less created. Yes, there were other factors as well, but 12 years of budget austerity is, you know, in my mind, the foundation for this problem that they're solving at least temporarily, but I don't know that anything more than a participation trophy is warranted for that.
Well, and the other piece of it is, you know, this is some problems with their pensions and things like that that have gone back a long, long time, back to when, you know, former Governor Scott Walker was in charge of Milwaukee County. So this is a longstanding problem that all kinds of people share responsibility for. But the fact of the matter is we couldn't let any county fail. So I'm glad that they've got the tools to fix it. That being said, you know, I'm not thrilled about expanding the voucher system. I'm not thrilled about any public money going to support private schools that are unaccountable. It's been kind of, you know, I'm trying to look at the glasses half full portion of it right now because I am glad that people were at the table and that people were working together.
Because if there weren't,
it's not what I would have done. Let's leave it at that.
but if Tim Michaels had won the governor's race, we would be talking right now about a budget bill that gave even more to private schools and decimated public schools. So we come back to voter participation last year played a massive role in making sure that this was at least the deal that we're talking about instead of what could have happened. So let's turn now to the Joint Finance Committee. As you mentioned, voting in the middle of the night, 2:30 in the morning, to take all the money that Governor Evers proposed to help keep childcare affordable in Wisconsin. And rather than saying, well, let's cut that a bit, let's cut it in half, let's cut it three quarters. No, they cut it to zero and have the audacity to say, well, yeah, that was a pandemic, you know, support program for childcare, but you know, now the pandemic's over and childcare has to stand on its own, as if there wasn't a childcare crisis in the making before the pandemic, Jody.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's a crisis that we have got the ability to help and to fix. I mean, not every crisis can we make some interventions on. We have got a once in a generation chance to make some investments in things that will fix systems for the future. We have a $7 billion surplus that's not going to be around forever. But how can we adjust things so that we are helping the working families of Wisconsin to be able to do what they need to do? It is getting to the point where daycare, if you can find it, and there's childcare deserts all over the place, but childcare is getting just as expensive, if not more expensive, than college tuition is right now. And there's not an option of taking out a childcare loan like there is student loans. So the opportunity then, the option that a lot of parents have is they say, well, maybe one of us is going to have to stay home and watch the kids. Certainly, if you have more than one, it's almost undoable unless you have some support or a six-figure job. And so every employer that I know is saying, we need workers, we need workers, we need workers. So the best way that we can help those businesses is by keeping childcare centers open. Childcare is workforce infrastructure. If you don't have a place to put the people who rely on you so that you can go and have them taken care of, it, when you go to your job, you can't go to your job. So making sure that we have safe and affordable childcare centers available in every corner of the state allows people to get to work and do the jobs that they need to do to keep our society running.
Jody, I can't believe that this is a partisan issue. And so not that you're not being asked to spill names or anything, but I have to think there are some Republican legislators who don't feel great about this. And maybe whether in a closed door caucus or maybe somewhat publicly are saying, you know, when the full budget bill comes to the floor of the Assembly or Senate, we should really try to do something about this. And by something, I don't mean the paltry $15 million revolving loan fund that Joint Finance put in 2 a.m. I'm talking about a real solution. Do you feel like there are Republican lawmakers who don't feel good about this and think there's still time to make a change?
I would hope so. But if I look at a lot of the Republicans that we have, not a lot of them have children who are young enough to rely on them for day-to-day care. We've got a lot of older people. We've got some younger people who don't have young children. And so I think they're kind of forgetting exactly how critical having the ability to have your children in childcare is for them to get to work and do their job.
So it doesn't look like there will necessarily be somebody riding to the rescue, but still, as we're going to talk about in our next segment, a lot of childcare providers, a lot of parents and business people are still trying to put pressure on Republican lawmakers. Or, you know, is that something you would encourage as well?
Absolutely. I think the more people reach out and say, I can't get to work unless I have affordable, safe childcare for my children, the more we can do that, the better it is. And some of the ideas that they're floating around right now, like starting up kind of a 529-like plan for childcare so that as soon as you get married, you can start putting money into it to save up for childcare.
Oh, come on. This is the health savings account method again?
But they're doing it for childcare. Oh, it just blows my mind. So what happens if you can't have a kid?
Right. Everything is just dollars to them, and put something in a separate account that we can give you a tax break for. Honestly, Jody, if the words tax break could come out of their mouths, could they exist as legislators and propose anything?
And the other piece of it is they're speaking from such a point of privilege to think that people have the extra money to be able to afford to stick in an account beforehand. It just blows my mind.
But that's
we need to start looking at the working families of Wisconsin and what we can do for them to make their lives better so that they can get to the next step in their lives. Exactly. Not what the lobbyists are needing and wanting.
So. Our last subject is infrastructure, something that Representative Emerson is living with street work outside of her house. And put up some pictures of the water pipes. And I've talked about it all the time, that infrastructure isn't just high-speed internet. It's also water and sewer lines from, what'd you say, 1911, those photos?
1911 and 1916 is when the infrastructure underneath my road was done. So I am thrilled for the chaos, noise, shaking windows, cracking plaster. Go for it. The thought that I might be able to take a shower and have somebody flush the toilet in my house at the same time without the water pressure dying it has thrilled me forever. So I'm so happy to be having this. So whether it's because of the infrastructure plans that Biden put through or not, every time some piece of equipment drives by, I just can't help but think, thanks, Biden. So
infrastructure. It's not just the internet and bridges. It's being able to flush the toilet and take a shower. Jody Emerson, thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Good to talk to you, Pat. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. We will talk more about the child care counts issue with a couple of providers right after this break. You're up north. All right, our topic now is asking legislators to restore some crucial support for working parents who need affordable child care. And to do that, I have a couple of providers here with me. I have Corrine Hendrickson, who is a provider and also part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group, along with Sarah Arozzo from Big Oak Child Care in Madison. Corrine, Sarah, nice to have you both here. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I would like this to not be a necessary appearance. It certainly looked unnecessary based on how Governor Tony Evers provided funding for childcare in Wisconsin. And it would be one thing to have a debate back and forth among the governor and Republicans about what exactly that dollar amount should be. But at 2:30 in the morning last Friday, Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee turned that $340 million number to zero. Corrine, first to you. I don't know when you first heard about that, but what was your first reaction whenever you heard it Friday morning?
So I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning and checked my phone, and I shouldn't have done that because I did not go back to sleep. And that's when I found out that it was completely gutted. My heart dropped, my stomach sunk, and I immediately put out a post to all of our weekend members and said, hey, this isn't the end. There are going to be other options. But the first other thought I had in my head was, how are the parents going to keep going? How are they going to afford childcare? How are they going to find childcare? And then I thought about all of my, you know, other business, you know, colleagues across the state and other businesses said they're not going to be able to find employees anymore because these parents are going to end up having to pay at least $50 more a week for childcare tuition. And that's unaffordable. And then to find out over the weekend that all those representatives were saying that parents should pay and all the people say parents should pay. Well, guess what? That cost that if parents are going to truly pay what they actually should be paying, if us teachers stop subsidizing what they can pay with our own wages and benefits and lack of benefits, a 0 to 2 year old would be $21,600. And it goes down to six plus at $10,800. Hey, employers, how are you going to be able to pay that? You're going to lose employees.
And these are things that you said before Congress. If folks think that Corrine's name is familiar, we talked to you when you were in Washington, D.C., telling Congress about this. And again, it was a congressional committee ostensibly about, you know, business regulation. And, you know, you helped shed light on this issue. Sarah, you too have seen the problem of affordable child care. It's a problem that far predates the pandemic, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We are, like Corrine said, care is so expensive. It's so costly. It's basically a college tuition for your under 2 year old. We're in Madison and we have, we have families who are working at the university. They're working for Epic and they're traveling for quality care to our center. And I said, like, again, they're paying over $20,000 a year in childcare, and that is just not sustainable or attainable. And yesterday I was speaking with Mark Lane's legal aides, and they
That'd
asked
be
me,
Representative well, Mark Lane from the Joint Finance Committee, right?
Yes, excuse me. Yes. Okay. But they said, well, what did you do before? Why can't you just go back to the way you were doing it before the pandemic, before these pandemic era supports came into play? And I just was like, we were bleeding out way before then. This has been a problem for a long time.
It is. Again, it's like people saying that, the pandemic caused the labor shortage when we knew for decades ahead that baby boomers were going to be retiring and that you should be preparing for this. And yet too many people in elected office were not preparing for this. And so, Corrine, I'm sure you were talking about this even pre-pandemic, that this issue was out there. So when President Biden and Democrats, put federal pandemic aid together, and then Governor Evers converted it into this child care counts so that essential workers during the pandemic could at least still have some child care options. You know, what was your take on that when child care counts was first created?
So actually, child care counts came out of a program that DCF had created before that. It was called Child Care Strong. They had been working with myself and several other people within the field. They had people that are actually child care providers and owners and directors of businesses talking with WECA, SFTA, and WCCAA, WFCCA. So those acronyms are all the other organizations that are statewide organizations that are kind of our groups that kind of work with us. But what happened was they had been talking about seeing that 5,000 childcare program businesses had actually been closed since 2007 already. And that the biggest part of that was the wages and the inability of us to pay more and have, you know, retirement or pay time off or healthcare. And so we had been talking with them about those things, and they basically created the program, and it called it Child Care Strong. And so they ended up introducing it in the 2021 budget as part of Department of Children and Families budget request. The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program and prove, basically like a pilot, and prove it works? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. The first time ever, there actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago. And that's going to stop. We're going to start shedding again. Just Monday, we lost two.
Can we talk about that strictly from a business standpoint? Because that appears to be what Republicans understand best. So Sarah, when we hear that this could cost $21,000 a year, you know, you're hearing, like you said, Republicans saying, well, you know, how is this any different than babysitting? How is this costing $21,000? Take us through the business of, you know, why this isn't the same as just dropping somebody off at a neighbor's house or a stranger's house.
Right. I mean, at my child care center alone, we have almost all of our teachers have at least associate's degrees. Over half of them have bachelor's degrees, and I have two teachers that have master's degrees. And when I hear it, we hear it in our field. Oh, you're just babysitters. You're just there to make sure that this kid stay alive. It's so much more than that. And I would love to see anybody else try to stay in a classroom and work with two-year-olds right before nap time, you know? And we have to pay these workers what they, you know, we have to try to pay these workers what they're worth, right? And paying somebody $17.50 an hour with a master's degree really just seems like such a slap in the face. I have two teachers, actually I have probably six teachers that have over 20 years of experience. And if they were in any other industry, 20 years of experience is going to, you're going to be compensated accordingly. You're going to be compensated for the amount of wisdom that you carry with you and the amount of experience that you have. And this is just not the field for that.
Corrine, you also gave an outstanding answer in your congressional testimony, basically challenging the Republicans. And then you listed a litany of things that you have to go through as a business person and as a childcare provider, you know, one that isn't just, again, just a babysitter, but all of what you need. I'm sure you gave some of those members of Congress an education.
Yeah, and it really was like just letting them know that we're businesses, and if we're not going to support our businesses and the foundation of all of the other businesses with federal dollars, then we're not going to have an economy. We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers as a nation on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about, you know, 11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. And it makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges system. They end up spending less on jail. Right now, because we don't invest in our youngest learners and our children's brain development, we are having 2- and 3-year-olds expelled because we have teachers who don't understand how to meet those children's needs and understand that behavior is communication and how to do that. And because they're turning over because you're making $10 an hour and you're stressed out and you don't have the support that you need. And so it really just comes down to all of that. It's absurd. And we're spending so much more than we have to, but we expel 2 to 3 times the number of kids that the entire K-12 system expels. And then 8 times more likely to end up in jail. Like, this doesn't make sense. You talk about crime and, you know, wanting to decrease crime, but then all of a sudden you're not going to invest in the things that are going to keep that from happening. I just make it make sense.
I wish I could, but it does underscore something that has been talked about for, I guess, decades now in the legislature and in Congress. And that when they talk about 4-year-old kindergarten and pre-4K programs and the importance of them. So if you right now, if people equate childcare with babysitting, you know, you're wrong and that's on you. But let's take it from an educational aspect. You know, Sarah, you as along with every other provider can certainly talk about the importance of a child who is receiving something closer to an education in that, you know, birth to four range, as opposed to plopping them down in front of Nickelodeon or the Disney Channel.
Yeah, I mean, all of the science is there. It's whether or not our legislators choose to read it and believe it. You know, brain development is the most rapid in the first 5 years. And if we're sitting them down in front of Nickelodeon, and it's not to, you know, it's honestly, we have to talk about the caregivers too that are impacted by this, like the grandparents that are now forced to become the caregivers, and they don't know what educators know. They don't know what our teachers are trained to know. And they're impacted by this too. But it's a really hard, it's a really hard field to stay in. It's a really hard field to be in. And it is, like Corrine was saying, it's the most important investment that we can make in our economy, in our children, in our future. You know, they are our future.
Well, and it also, Corrine, gets back to this notion, again, something that has been debated over in Wisconsin for, you know, since 2010. And I shouldn't even say a debate because it's not a debate, but this marginalization of teachers and educators overall. And now it manifests itself in something called parents' rights, which is nothing more than a way for some parents to disagree with a teacher who is probably much more highly trained, much more skilled. And again, that's not to say that, you know, parents don't have a role. What we're saying is stop denigrating the role of the actual educators who help children learn. It again is not, people want this simpler time, but children always are better off when they're in some kind of a learning environment. Right, Corrine?
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of interesting to me because, like, World War II, when all the women needed to take over and, you know, go to work so that our men could go to war, our country created an entire infrastructure of universal childcare. In 1970s, the same thing, as more women were going to work, because really it comes down to, it's a choice issue. Women should be able to choose whether they work or stay home. But it shouldn't be an either or situation. And so in the 1970s, people worked really hard to get a universal childcare system up and running, and it made it through, but then Nixon vetoed it. So 50 years ago, we could have solved this problem and done what the rest of the world was also doing at that time, using the research that we had created in order to do that. And it's just really, really frustrating to me. And they're also, it feels like they're trying to pit the teachers against the parents, because they know that if we're divided, we cannot come together and actually look at the people who are causing the problems and insist that they change it, and holding them accountable and paying attention. And I think that's the biggest thing that WeCan has done with our members, is really just bringing us together, talking about how we can talk to parents, have parents talk to their employers, and all of us can come together to say, look, this isn't working for any of us. Stop trying to, you know, divide and conquer and work with us. And I think they've gotten away with it for so long that they don't feel, because of the gerrymandering, they don't feel that they'll be held accountable. But people are paying attention now. And, you know, fair maps or not, we have members that are ready to run. I'm personally contemplating it. And, you know, it could be Senator Markline, because I actually, if the gerrymandered maps end, it will be me in my home right now. And if they don't, I have an option of moving to a place where, you know, he lives. And so it's kind of one of those things that we're learning to understand the process. We're asking for that budget amendment because we know that's next. And so many of our members have sent emails to representatives, and they're still trying to hide and say, well, the JFC cut it, there's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. You can vote for the amendment for $340 million to continue childcare counts. And they're not responding back because they don't know how to respond to that, because they are like, oh, they are educated. They know what's happening. They're actually going to hold us accountable.
That's right. And so people can call the Wisconsin Legislative Hotline, 800-362-9472, or contact your legislators directly, your state assembly rep, your state senator, and tell them that, yes, on the floor of the assembly and on the floor of the Senate, they have a vote. They have a voice. And they can, in fact, support an amendment that changes that zero back into something that shows an actual commitment to our children, as well as to the worker shortage in Wisconsin. Sarah, Corrine, thank you so much for joining me. I know how active you've been trying to persuade people to talk to their legislators and still have to take care of our kids as well. I appreciate it very much. Have a great day.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
All right. Again, contact your legislator through their hotline, 800-362-9472 is one of the ways, or through email or phone as well. Todd Albus coming up right after this break. You're up north. Or another, we have convinced Todd Alba that he can still wake up earlier, even though he has now an afternoon show from 1 to 3 here on the Civic Media Radio Network. But he does get up a little earlier on Wednesday to join us, talk about his show, what he's done, what he's doing. How are things coming along, Mr. Alba?
Well, I'm here in the Mar-a-Lago bathroom. I have my boxes behind me of packed full. We're on location here. We will no box will go unturned for the Pat Kreitlow show.
What does that say? Their top secret behind there? What is
yes. That's
unbelievable. Let me see that one. Deliver to Vlad.
Right.
I hope it's poutine. I hope it's going to Canada and not to Putin.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if it was poutine? Yeah.
Yeah, well, then we wouldn't ship it. We just open that baby up. Yeah. Speaking of which, Wisconsin State Fair food. We were talking about that earlier in the show. You know, Aaron and I are not State Fair veterans, but, you know, any kind of fair food that you can talk about. You got a favorite?
I'm a sucker for like an elephant ear or a
funnel cake.
Funnel cake, yeah.
That was on the list. Mine is, I talked about my tradition of a foot-long hot dog for breakfast. When I go to the State Fair, and you know, then of course your cheese curds and your corn on the cob and things like that. I'm not big on trying the really, you know, new, unusual, you know, deep fried candy bars.
Yeah, neither am I.
Whatever. I always like hearing about them. I know that, you know, the Wisconsin State Fair has the Sporkies,
right?
And there are things that sound very enticing. And then there are things that, you know, sound like you took the whole, remember the old box of 64 Crayola crayons?
Oh yeah.
And you just dumped all the colors into a pot, stirred them together, and it's going to taste exactly like that. But I could be wrong. You know, there's a reason they're up for these awards.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think a cream puff tastes better than the Wisconsin State Fair down there when the folks put them together. You kind of stand in line for 20 minutes to get a cream puff. It just tastes better, Pat.
I guess that's what they say. Although I was saying before, you know, for me, a cream puff is kind of a cream puff, but clearly I've got to go give these State Fair ones another go. What you've been talking about or what's coming up on the Todd Alba show?
Well, for those watching on the stream, I am packing. I moved tomorrow, so that's why my apartment is a disaster. My little sister is down from your neck of the woods, from Eau Claire, so she's helping me out. So she's very excited about the new station, WCFW, up there in Eau Claire. And the Pat Kreitlow show coming up to a station in a town near you in the Chippewa Valley. Mm-hmm. Today we have, of course, you on in the crossover portion in the first part of the show at a little after 1 o'clock. And then our friend Trigby Olson from the Lincoln Project joins us. We're going to be talking about a couple of the same things you have been this morning, Pat. The obnoxiousness of Robin Voss trying to get an amendment through to essentially start to defund the Wisconsin Technical College system. If you thought it was your UW system that was just under attack, you would be wrong. Robin Voss is, we have a segment called What's Poppin' with Robin Voss. Because you know, he owns a popcorn store.
So. I see what you did there. Will you, especially with Trigvy, be getting into this whole notion of Trump legal advisor John Eastman? His trial began yesterday in California, where he could conceivably lose his law license, and he's the person who actually talked to Wisconsin legislators in December of 2021 and said, "You can still overturn and invalidate Wisconsin's electoral votes," which is not a thing. No, you can't do that. And so you've got this Wisconsin connection to the Eastman case, where I'm sure the Lincoln Project and everybody else is watching all these ringleaders and waiting for some more accountability for them.
Yeah, I mean, we'll certainly touch on that. Eastman and Jim Troupis and Andrew Hitt and Mark Jefferson,
Cleta Mitchell. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cabal of of folks here in the Wisconsin Republican Party, or attached to them tangentially, like Eastman. And it really is, you got to make fun of it to a certain degree, but the seriousness is, it is an attack on American democracy. We spent time yesterday, we'll continue it today, talking about the esteemed, I say that with tongue in cheek, State Senator Steve Noss from UW Whitewater, who is the chair of the State University Committee in the legislature on the Senate side. He was appalled yesterday and literally called out and said, you know, quote, what the hell is going on when it comes to universities reminding their students that they can actually exercise their constitutional and civic responsibility to vote. I'm not making this up.
He thought there was something wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm not making this up. His problem is, he says, if you're here and going to school, you shouldn't be able to vote. And of course, under Wisconsin law, you know this, if you live in reside somewhere permanently for 28 days or more, you are legally able to vote in the state of Wisconsin.
And you should want them to vote. You should want them to become voters, because then they will stay. They keep talking about attracting people to Wisconsin. You're not going to. Here's the best way to do it. When somebody comes to UW-Eau Claire, wherever, as a freshman, like I did, convince them to stay here, to put down roots and stay in the state. And instead you're saying, oh, you need to go back home. When somebody leaves home at 18 or whenever, as we all know, there's no guarantee they're ever coming back to their hometown. They may go wherever and then wherever and then wherever, but you want to force them to vote in elections in a place where they no longer live. There's nothing other than partisan motivations behind having such a ridiculous stance.
You've said this before. I know you and Dr. Lyerly have talked about it on Up North News. I believe I saw this morning 57% of Americans, I think it was a, don't quote me, a CBS poll or a Washington Post poll, 57% of Americans disagree with overturning Roe v. Wade. Republicans know in Wisconsin and elsewhere that their ideas no longer connect with 50% plus one. And in order to win elections, they have to rely on things like gerrymandering and voter dissuasion and voter suppression.
I don't know. There is no other organized, advanced democracy on planet Earth where one of the major political parties is now built on a foundation of making it harder to vote. It continues to be wrapped in this, you know, and John Eastman mentioned it yesterday in his trial, you know, irregularities or reports of stop it. Stop it. You instigated the rumor about irregularities. There have been countless opportunities to prove anything. And you can keep saying it all day long. Ron Johnson yesterday said, you know, he was criticizing the Hunter Biden plea deal, even though Hunter Biden got charged with things that most regular folks would not be accused of. If you pay back your taxes, you're not going to face criminal charges. And Biden did pay them back. But that's beside the point. Ron Johnson getting involved saying, oh, this is a terrible miscarriage of justice. Ron Johnson ought to watch his own mouth, because this Eastman trial is going to have more to say about the fake electors. And, you know, the fraudulent ballot that he was this close to delivering. And so I just think that, again, if all they're going to do is attack democracy and attack voting and undermine elections, we need to follow things through like this, like Eastman's law license, like the January 6th commission and so forth. Anyway, sorry to filibuster on your time there, but I know you will have much more to say about it between 1 and 3 today.
We will, along with you. And I just say, people in Chippewa Valley, other places, they're smart folks. Just ask yourself, why are people doing this behind closed doors in the middle of the night?
Exactly. All right. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, people of the pod, we love every download. Thank you. Come back again soon. And if you're listening live, keep that radio right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.